Warwick Long here with you for the Country Hour again today. But sadly, closures are a large part of today's program. Abattoirs shutting, and so are packing sheds.
Disappointing to me. I've been involved all my life with the packing house and been chairman for probably 30-odd years, and so it's pretty disappointing. But you've got to deal with the facts of life as they present themselves.
Also today, how much do you think cattle are getting when they're sold online compared to the sale yards? One company's done the look and apparently they're getting more if you sell them online. We're going to sort your eckies from your ockies and find out all the details today on the Country Hour. Thanks for your company. The National Farmers Federation says it's time for a serious conversation about the consolidation of big agricultural businesses. It follows the announced closure earlier this week of Churchill Abattoir, Australia's largest domestic meatworks, and Steggles chicken processing facility in southern Queensland. Around 800 people are expected to lose their jobs and many farmers will need to find new contracts. NFF CEO Tony Maher says the latest consolidation is a serious concern for the meat processing sector and for agriculture as a whole.
Yeah, it's pretty concerning. I mean, what we know in the agriculture industry that the supply chain is incredibly tight and we know that margins and the competitiveness of the industry really depends on a strong, reliable supply chain from growers to processors to retailers and exporters. So really concerning that this will have an impact on rural and regional Australia and the farmers that and producers that live in those regions.
How concerned are you about the strength of that supply chain you speak of?
Well, it's critical. You know, we need to have strong, reliable, secure supply chains for producers and farmers to not only continue to produce, but to continue to invest and innovate and you know, look for efficiencies in their business. They really need the security and long-term contractual arrangements in some cases that allow them to invest and have, you know, confidence that they've got markets and supply chains to continue to deliver to.
What do you think then all of this says about big businesses? Churchill, Abattoir, Steggles, they're big operations. What does this say for them, their workers and their farmers?
Well, it's extremely disappointing for the workers, obviously, that it looked like they might lose their employment. It's disappointing for the farmers who and producers that supply to these processing plants. And ultimately, the consumers. I mean, at the end of the day, we need, or farmers need processors. Processors need farmers. Retailers need both of those organisations. And ultimately, the consumers. I mean, that's where these products go. So what we need is to have sit down with these groups and look at the challenges they're facing and make sure that they understand the challenges that the farm sector and producers are facing, where all parts of the supply chain are under pressure. And we need to have that discussion about how we can address those issues. You know, energy costs, transport costs, labour costs, all of these things are really critical to an ongoing supply chain, and a supply chain that we've got confidence in at the moment, it doesn't appear that we've got that.
And when you touch on that, Tony Maher, we only heard a day or so ago the Australian Meat Industry Council say they've never seen such dire circumstances. So will NFF and will you work to get everyone in the supply chain together to sit down and talk and find a way forward?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we'll be doing. We'll be working for our members, with our members, farmers and producers, to make sure that we can do everything we can to give confidence in the supply chain and confidence that we can address all of those issues. I mean, we advocate, we'll continue to advocate for things like energy policy, opening up markets, trade agreements that give producers more options and more lucrative options in some of these markets we know are expanding. So we've got to continue to have a strong coordinated voice to decision makers, and whether that's processors or whether it's retailers or to consumer groups and government, to make sure that the farmer interests are in the forefront of everyone's mind.
And when we speak of farmers and the workers, the employees at these operations, effectively they're price takers. Do you think there needs to be more safeguards for those people when we see more and more of this happening with big businesses? We only need to look at the dairy sector and Murray Goulburn and everything that happened there.
Well, I mean, that's the nature of the business. We've got a large number of small producers and a small number of large processors. And, I mean, that has been the case for a long time. What we need to do is to make sure that we've got an understanding of that structure, that market structure, and we've got measures in place that people have got confidence that it's going to remain. I mean, I think the days of having a large number of processes, you know, I mean, that's been changing for decades. The fact is we need to actually work out ways we can better deal with that consolidation across the supply chain from a farmer base.
Do you have any ideas of how you could do that?
Well, it's about, I mean, the very basic level, understanding the pressures that, you know, different parts of the supply chain are facing, and recognising and getting a commitment from that there's got to be fairness and equity across the supply chain. I mean, farmers have to have the ability to make a reasonable profit, and we understand that the processors need to do that. We understand that retailers need to do that, but it's got to be fair and equitable, and we've got to have an understanding of the pressures that each part in the supply chain is actually facing.
It does sound like a hard task, though, Tony Ma.
Oh, it is. I haven't got any, you know, there's no panacea to this, but it's the very least we need to have a conversation, as I say, understand what each part of the supply chain is facing. It's an ongoing challenge and one that the NFF will continue to work for.
NFF CEO Tony Ma speaking to Lara Webster there. You're listening to The Country Hour. It's 12 past 12, and it's not just in Queensland where closures are happening. Drought, pest, insects and dwindling supplies are some of the reasons behind the decision for a citrus packing house to close its doors. After 60 years of bagging brightly coloured fruit, Border Packers at Kundrook in northern Victoria has stopped boxing oranges and is up for sale. Company director and former chairman Neil Eagle explains why the business will go under the hammer next month.
It's been operating since 1952, 65 years, and we had a number of growers that were in production getting up to probably about a peak of about 12 to 15. But progressively, that's been depleted for a variety of reasons. Some of it have been growers that have got older and then sold out because they haven't had anybody to follow on. And then through this last drought period and then a period when we had an outbreak of fruit fly that created a lot of problem till we've got it under control. We had growers that got disillusioned with their prices, and some had ceased to produce. They'd let their orchards go. And so we ended up with only two or three growers left supplying our packing house and processing facility. And that really wasn't enough to sustain the operation. The throughput declined to the stage where it wasn't sufficient to sustain the operation, and so we've had no option but to take this step.
Can you explain the operation a little further?
It was a community-operated operation. There's not many left. When I started, the majority of the packing houses were owned by growers, and now there's probably only our packing house and one in Leeton, Pacific Fresh, that's actually a multiple grower-owned packing unit. There are individual packing houses that are owned by growers, but in general are now owned by corporations or private enterprise, not by the growers.
And so how far and wide was fruit being supplied to you?
Oh, we've had fruit supplied from as far away as Wangaratta, Cobram, previously around the Echuca area at Perakuta, and down as far as the Boundary Bend area, as well as our own localised growers, which we had about eight or so local growers here as well.
And so how much fruit would you have packed a year?
We were packing up around 300,000-400,000 cases of fruit. That's a variety. Winter oranges, summer oranges, which is the navels in the winter, summer oranges, Valencias, and then grapefruit and lemons.
So in terms of the employees, how many employees were you?
At the period, we would have been up in the 20s to 30 employees at the packing house.
And just in more recent times?
In more recent time, obviously that had to decline as we were dropping back in production, but we would have been up around the 15 to 20 up until this last year.
And so those employees that you have had to let go, have you already done that, or are you in the process?
In general, that's the case. A few of them have been able to gain employment at another packing house that's been established out by Geelong Citrus in the area, and so that's provided some employment for some of the people that lost their positions.
The property, the processing plant there, that is up for sale, when will it go up for sale?
On the 15th of September. It'll go up for sale initially as a whole, and we'll see just how that develops and what level of interest there is.
It must be rather disappointing to be putting it up for sale, considering there's been a turnaround and things seem to be pretty good for many.
Yes, yeah, disappointing to me. I've been involved all my life with the packing house and been chairman for probably 30-odd years, and so it's pretty disappointing. But you've got to deal with the facts of life as they present themselves, and that's been the case. The only thing that can turn it around is throughput and numbers of growers supplying the shed, and that, unfortunately, that just wasn't sufficient, which is disappointing because some of them had gone out of production for a variety of reasons just shortly before the turnaround.
That's Border Packers Company Director and former Chairman Neil Eagle speaking there with Cherie von Hirschner. You're listening to The Country Hour. Some of your texts coming in on some of the closure talk already. We heard from the NFF speaking about the closure of Meatworks earlier on in the program. And Jeff has sent a text to 0467 842 722. And he says, "G'day Warwick, the meat workers' problem is really a no-brainer. It's called live animal export." That's Jeff's views. 0467 842 722 if you'd like to get involved. And actually, it's probably a good time of the program for me to ask you this. I've got a dilemma I'd love you to help me solve as a Country Hour listener while you're listening to this. I want to know what you want to hear right now because we're coming up to show season. And we were talking about this in the Country Hour office today about should we do a broadcast and go to the Royal Melbourne Show. Is it agricultural enough? Now, in other states like Brisbane and South Australia, they come to mind, their Royal Show is a huge hallmark of their calendar. They really move reporters around all around it, and they make it quite a feature of their programming. And I'd love you to tell me if you would like us to do the same. If you think the Royal Melbourne Show is enough about agriculture now for us to broadcast from there. Maybe you can tell me your thoughts. Give me a yes or no, or give me some further detail. Send me a text, 0467 842 722. Is it worth it for the Country Hour to go to the show? Is that stuff you want to hear from us on this program? Send us a text, 0467 842 722. If you'd like to state your case, you can always call us 1300 977 222. That number again, 1300 977 222. I would love your thoughts on this. I'm actually running a Twitter poll on it right now. I might tell you the results, well, not even the results, how that's going a little bit later. I don't want to cloud your views, but I would really love you to send me a text. Tell me if you think we should go to the Melbourne show or not. Send a text, 0467 842 722.
Streaming right around the world, you're with The Country Hour, Australia's longest-running radio show.
While you contemplate that question, let's talk some good news. Young lambs straight from the mum to the sale yards are in high demand and hitting high prices. Sucker lambs made over $190 at the Horsham Yards yesterday. Lily Hoffman went to the yards and spoke to livestock carrier Gordon Fisher.
Off to a brilliant start, actually. Yeah, the weather-wise has been brilliant, and we haven't seen the country look so good for a long time.
While the wet weather has provided good feed, it has meant a slower start to the season.
It's reduced the numbers a bit because it's been too wet to get them out, but in the long term it'll all be better.
Sucker lambs are a hot bid at the sale yards right now, with the Wagga Wagga Exchange breaking record prices at $197. On-site manager for the Horsham Regional Livestock Exchange, Exchange, Paul Christopher, says prices yesterday were the best of the season.
Look, our top price today was $193 for our new season lambs, which is really good. I'd say the price would be at least up $10, but we haven't had our person work it all out yet, but there was lots of lambs that made upwards of $160, and even our smaller lambs, they were selling very well. Apparently there's a religious festival coming up, so they're looking for lambs to slaughter, so it's been really good today.
However, the wet weather has been providing good feed and producers are not selling off stock. While prices are looking promising, Paul says numbers at the yards have been low.
We haven't had any sorts of numbers for the last 6 weeks, so we've had about 5,000 lambs coming today, with a lot of them being new season's lambs, so it's always a suck it and see, really, to see where we sit and how good the lambs have come up. If we can get a bit more sunshine and the grass is growing around here, we've been lucky enough to get plenty of rain. So, I'm envisaging that the lambs will be really good, so hopefully we can keep them coming through the Horsham Regional Livestock Exchange.
It's on-site manager for the Horsham Regional Livestock Exchange, Paul Christopher, ending that story by Lily Hoffman. Well, I did ask you if you'd tell us if you thought we should go to the show or not for a broadcast, and you have answered. There's plenty of texts coming in on 0467 842 722. Stephen Uroa says, no way. The show has abandoned agriculture and provides a glorified petting zoo. Jeff from Lang Lang has texted to say RMS has little to no agriculture in it, so a total waste of time. There are other country shows that would be better. Thanks for that text as well, Jeff and Steve. Nigel's called in 1300 977 222. If you want to ring in and tell us if we should go to the show or not. Nigel, what are your thoughts? Should we go?
I think it's an entire waste of a train ticket for the family or yourself. I said my wife and I went last time a couple of years ago, and lo and behold, you go to look at the animals in the stalls and there's a security guard there telling you can't go in because of this, that and another thing. Well, what a load of hooey. All you're doing is looking at the animals.
Well, a vote for no from Nigel. Thanks very much for your call.
Good on you.
That's Nigel from Vespa calling here on the Country Hour, 1300 977 222. A few more texts just before we move to an extra. We're talking about carp very shortly on the Country Hour. But before we get that, Jack says, Melbourne show, definitely yes. You're part of it staying agricultural. If you don't go, it diminishes agricultural coverage and importance. Thanks for that text, Jack. Another text says, no, sheep pension's better, from Michael. Another one says, no, the ag side of the show is just a display for city folk. Nothing to influence agriculture, really. Plenty more of your texts coming in. Keep them coming. You can call 1300 977 222 or text 0467 842 722. You can tell us if you think we should be going to the show for the Country Hour as programming. Well, let's keep the Country Hour programming going right now at 23 past 12. Let's talk about carp now, and the case is being made to talk about the destruction of carp and their effect on Australia's waterways. There has been an announcement today about research into carp and what they're going to do. And Dr. Peter Chudley of AgTrans Research is going to head a project to look at both market-related issues, such as changes in water treatment costs and non-market costs, and benefits such as changes in recreational fishing experiences and, of course, that word biodiversity. And you can tell us a little bit about it now. Dr. Peter Chudley, thanks very much for joining us on the Country Hour.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks, Warwick.
What are you going... Well, tell us a little bit about your research. What's the plan and how are you going to do it?
Okay, our part of the program is to look at the costs and benefits of carp. Now, in that context, we're first of all starting with the current costs and benefits, which, as you've mentioned, includes water quality and biodiversity, and also the cost impacts on the recreational fishers, where they have a lesser amenity experiences in fishing, and there's other amenities that can get affected by carp, such as the clearer water or the muddiness of the water. So basically, we're going to start with what are the costs and benefits at the moment, and then project that into the future if we do nothing. In other words, if we don't do anything about it, what are the costs and benefits going to be in the future? The costs seem to outweigh the benefits at the moment, although there are some benefits, such as some processors use some of the carp that are caught to produce products. But in general, the costs are generally regarded as being greater than the benefits. So in the future, will they change? Will they change with climate change, for example? Will the costs, will the carp impacts get greater or less? So that's the sort of baseline that we're looking at.
Is this part of building the case to show that the carp virus is needed in our waterways?
Yes, well, when you do a benefit cost analysis, which is our project, then you need to look at what would happen without the virus release. So that's what I've just mentioned. Now, with the virus release, what are the, how will those costs and benefits change? And that's the big question. And it's going, from our point of view, we're going to rely, as we're economists, we're going to rely on the scientists, the biologists and the ecologists to make the best and robust assumptions so that we can put that into our model, into our economic model.
And you've been working in this field for some time, if you don't mind me saying. What are you expecting to see out of this? Do you have a feel for which way your research will go?
Not at this stage, Warwick. It's going to take a while. We're only just starting. And like when you do any sort of economic analysis, you don't want to have any prejudgment about what the results are going to be. So at the moment, we're just working with the, we're doing a literature review and seeing what's been done in the past and what costs and benefits have been are out there at the moment. But we're going to do a much more thorough analysis of both the market costs and the non-market costs.
And how do you identify really what those costs are? Are putting an economic price on the native environment, I'd imagine, is quite difficult to do.
Yes, it is. My colleague, Professor Jeff Bennett from ANU, is going to be handling that community interaction, and he will be eliciting responses from different parts of the communities, people that might live in cities, people that might live on rivers. Those elicit some values for what they would put on the reduction in carp numbers.
When will your research be done?
Over the next 12 months, and it will culminate in a report to the National Carp Control Plan, and will help them to decide what to recommend to government as to whether this virus gets released or not.
Yeah, and will that do you know if your report will be made public? Is there a commitment to that?
I'm not sure at this stage, and I can't answer that, Warwick.
I suppose from here, then it's just a wait and see. Then, as you work through your research, we'll look with bated breath. But I suppose as far as community consultation and their input, you mentioned that you're going through that. Is there a way that people can get involved or give their information to you?
Well, that's only just starting as well, and you would need to talk to Jeff Bennett about that. But I'm sure that his plan, which is currently being developed, will involve a lot of community consultation and different parts of the community and what they value and what they don't value with regard to carp. And will be commencing in the next 6 months.
If things stay as they are, in your view, can carp and native fish cohabitate an area like the Murray-Darling Basin like they have, with carp being obviously the dominant fish and biomass through the river system? And can the native environment continue, well, improve while carp are there?
Probably not, but you would need to talk to some of the other principal investigators in some of the more ecological orientated projects to establish that. But I think, as I said before, if we don't do anything, it's possible that the impact of carp will get worse over time.
Well, we thank you very much for your time on the Country Hour today.
Thanks, Warwick.
That's Dr. Peter Chudley from AgTrans Research speaking to us about some work that's going on into carp across the next 12 months or so, building the case for whether, well, the economic case really, as you heard there, about whether the carp virus will be required or not. Now, you're listening to The Country Hour. It is 29 past 12. We've been asking you if you think we should go to the show and broadcast from the Melbourne show. Is it agricultural enough for you as a listener? Is that something that you would like us to do? A lot of your texts coming in still. Kathy from the Western District says it would be good to hear from the Melbourne show when it's on. Would have met more farmers on Country Hour if it were from Sheepvention or at Bendigo to hear about export promotion of wool. Keep up the great work. Jan says, definitely yes. I'd love to hear daily broadcasts from the show. Interviews with livestock exhibitors and some competition results would be great. Jeff says, agree with Nigel. Went last year after a 20-year gap. Never again. Wrote to RAS and expressed my concerns. No reply. Go to Farm World or the like, says Jeff. Some callers now on 1300 977 222. Tony's at Mortlake. Tony, should we go to the show?
Oh, I don't think so, Warwick. I was like one of the previous callers. We went 2 or 3 years ago after a period of probably 20 years when we first took our children, and it was just a complete waste of time. There was no possible interaction with animals or seen any animals. If you're hungry, it's a good place to be because there's plenty of places to eat and plenty of show bags to buy. But no, completely removed from agriculture as far as I'm concerned, and I think you get a greater vibe from the country shows, really. You know, your mirror shows and the like, if you want to interact with animals and so forth, but Melbourne show, definitely not.
And I suppose there's the two sides to that, isn't there, Tony? There's the interaction with the animals, and there's also the what we try and fulfil on the Country Hour too, which is providing information people need or would like to hear for their own farming businesses as well. And by the sense,
yeah, most definitely,
you don't think we'd get that at the Melbourne show?
I don't think so. I think probably what's killed is occupational health and safety with you know, the possibility of people getting stood on by a bull or kicked by a cow or whatever, and I suppose that's been the reason why animals are being removed from the general public, I think. So, you know, it's... No, I think as far as interaction with agriculture, I think what you do out in the regional areas is far more appropriate and more timely with as far as farming people go. Yeah.
Tony, thank you very much for your call to The Country Hour on 1300 977 222. We're asking if you think we should go to the show. Camilla, hold tight. She's on the line, but I can't say no to Simon Galletta with regional news headlines. We better go there first and we'll return to some of your calls and texts after that. So let's get some regional news headlines now. Take it away, Simon Galletta.
Thanks, Warwick. I wouldn't mind hearing a little bit more, but that's okay. Notorious paedophile priest Jared Ridsdale has been sentenced to 11 years jail for historic sexual abuse offences. Ridsdale was convicted of rape, sexual assault and other offences involving 12 victims while serving as a Catholic priest in Western Victoria in the early 1960s to 1980s. The 83-year-old has spent the past 23 years in jail for previous child sexual convictions. Ridsdale was due to be eligible for parole in 2019, but his earliest release date will now be extended to 2022. The Victorian Farmers Federation is warning farmers to think of both the long and short term when... to think of both the short and long-term implications when buying and selling water allocations. It comes as water markets advisor Aether released a report showing water entitlement prices remain at record highs across the southern Murray-Darling Basin. It highlighted the increased sophistication of water market buyers and sellers, with a total value of trade in the southern Murray-Darling Basin valued at $612 million in entitlements for 2016-17. High lead levels have been detected at Wodonga's Hunchback Hill following an investigation by the Environment Protection Authority. The lead levels pose a minimum risk to human health, but visitors to the hill are advised to avoid disturbing the soil. The contamination is a result of past shooting activities at the site that's now owned by the Department of Environment, Land, Water and Planning. Health union members have rallied in Bendigo City Centre against proposed private agency involvement in the disability sector. The Health and Community Service Union is worried about non-government agencies leading to a privatisation of the sector. Workers are marching to the member for Bendigo East, Jacinta Allen's office, to voice their opposition. And the operators of a mental health facility in Western Victoria have moved to reassure patients that they won't be made homeless when the centre closes at the end of the year. The Eastern View unit is aimed at helping people with conditions like agoraphobia to function in the community, but is due to be closed in December to make way for drug and alcohol rehabilitation patients. The centre says alternative accommodation will be found for all its patients. And for more news, you can visit our website at abc.net.au/news.
Thanks, Simon. Simon Galletta with ABC News Regional Headlines. And don't worry, Simon, if you sit there now, we will take you back to some calls about whether the Country Hour should go to the show. And Camilla from Yarrawirra has waited very patiently for us. Camilla, should we go to the show?
No way. I'm sorry, Warwick. Gone are the days. It was a decent show. I first started showing there in the early 60s. And no way would I go to exhibit there anymore. It's like a glorified sort of fair. Half the breeds of animals have gone. And this year, no poultry. Come to a good country show where you can go to talk to the people, the exhibitors. If you want to pet the animals, you can. Children can. Learn more. If you want to learn about animals, come to a good show. And I know Warwick, you'd endorse my remarks. The Shepparton Show is one of the biggest and best in regional Victoria.
I did not pay Camilla for that endorsement, but thank you very much.
I can't resist them. So we have a good show at Shepparton.
You're big into the dogs. That's a big dog show, isn't it, the Shepparton Show?
Yes. I run the dog section. I'm very proud to say so. I'm very friendly with a lot of other people who run different sections. We have a big goat section, big poultry section. I could go.
Sheep shearing.
Children come and pet the sheep, see the shorn and ask about the naked sheep afterwards.
So country shows are the way to go for Camilla. That's her vote. You can tell us your vote, 1300 977 222, or you can text 0467 842 722. A few more of your texts just before we head to the weather. The Victorian Country Hour going to the Royal Melbourne Show will be of no benefit to anyone until the program is broadcast into Melbourne as well as the country areas. The RAS has abandoned country people, kicking the poultry show people from the building they built and paid for in preference for a TV cooking show. Should tell you how things are going. That's from Ali in Rochester. Thank you very much for your text, Ali. I'm just reading them as they come in. Another one says, you should go only if you buy all listeners a show bag. On the ABC budget, no chance. Sorry. Glenn, along the same line, says, hey, if you do go, can you get me a Birdie Beetle show bag as well? Sorry, Glenn. If I even ever did buy it for you, I'd eat it before I got back, because that always happens when I buy one of those. Let's find out what's happening weather-wise around Victoria. Now move away from the show for just a moment. Michael Efron is in the Weather Bureau to take us through what's happening today on this last day of winter. G'day, Michael.
Good afternoon, Warwick.
And last day of winter. What does the last few months say for us? Is there any stats available yet about what we've been through?
Yeah, still coming through, although June was really dry across the state, one of the driest on record. But we have seen some good rain over July and August across the state. In terms of temperatures, minimum temperatures were below average, and that was in large part due to a number of slow-moving highs across the state, but maximum temperatures were slightly above average. So a bit of a mixed bag across winter, but a glorious day today across the state after a cold start, down to minus three at Westmere this morning, minus 2.5 at Mortlake, and across the northeast, Rutherglen, minus 4.5, so very cold start to the day today, but light winds and mostly clear skies across the state today, apart from East Gippsland, where we're still seeing a few light showers as a low over the Tasman moves slowly away to the east, but elsewhere dry and mostly sunny, and temperatures generally in the mid to high teens today, 19 at Mildura, 16 at Swan Hill, 15 for Horsham, Bendigo, Shepparton, Echuca, Seymour, Wangaratta and Hamilton, 14 at Ballarat and Sale, 15 the top at Bairnsdale. But heading into Friday, we will see a cold front slipping away to the southeast as it approaches western Victoria. So a bit of cloud across western and central areas during the day on Friday. The chance of a light shower or two over the Wimmera and southwest districts, but dry conditions expected elsewhere. once again, extensive frost across central and eastern areas to start the day. So we will be issuing another frost warning this afternoon. Light winds in the east, but northerlies developing over central and western areas. Quite warm over the northwest, 23, the top expected at Mildura, 19 at Swan Hill, 17 at Horsham and Echuca, 16 at Shepparton, 15 at Bendigo and Seymour, also 15 at Wangaratta, 16 at Albury, Wodonga and Sale, 17 at Bairnsdale. So another fairly pleasant day across the state on Friday, but a bit of cloud across the west and the slight chance of a shower there as well.
During Saturday, just as you move into Saturday, we do have a text here saying, can you please ask the Weather Bureau how much rain for the southern Mallee over the weekend? I may be able to spread urea if there's a chance. So I thought I'd slip that question in as you're moving
into
Saturday.
That's okay, yeah. So on Saturday, we will see the shower activity becoming a bit more extensive, extending to most areas, especially the southwest and northeast of the state, and becoming very windy as well later Saturday. Temperatures across the northwest getting up to 27 at Mildura, 22 at Swan Hill, around 17 or 18 for most other locations, perhaps hitting 20 across Gippsland. In terms of rainfall, I think on Saturday across the Mallee, looking at maybe 1 or 2 millimetres with that cloud band moving in from the west. Not a great deal expected on Saturday. And on Sunday, similar totals as well across southern parts of the Mallee. So looks like over the weekend we will see around 10 to 15 millimetres over the southwest district and over the northeast ranges as well. But for most other districts, falls around 1 to 5 millimetres, perhaps a little bit more around the Wimmera, southern parts of the Wimmera, and perhaps only a couple of millimetres over East Gippsland with those north-westerly winds across the state. So I think Saturday night we will see gale-force winds developing for many areas, mainly across elevated parts of the state, but a warning likely to be issued on Friday for those winds picking up on Saturday afternoon and evening. Heading into Sunday, we do have the cold front crossing the state, so becoming a bit colder, especially Sunday afternoon and evening. The risk of some thunderstorms over the southwest coast as well later on Sunday. Snowfalls developing above 1,200 metres as well. And temperatures across the north, generally in the high teens, and getting into the low 20s over Gippsland as well before that change moves through. But elsewhere, maximums between 15 and 17 degrees. But heading into Monday, very cold conditions developing over the state following the passage of that front. So farmers need to be aware of those really cold conditions on the Monday with strong westerly winds reaching gale force, I think, over southern parts during the day. Snowfalls above 500 metres as well, and showers mainly affecting southern and mountain areas, local hail and thunder across the south. Temperatures on Monday generally in the low to mid-teens across the state, only reaching 9 at Ballarat, and then it only very slowly improves towards the middle part of the week, Tuesday. Once again, showers with local hail and thunder across the south, snowfalls above 500 metres and those strong winds continuing, temperatures in the low to mid-teens. Wednesday, once again, temperatures in the low to mid-teens, snowfalls back up to above 900 metres elevation and the winds easing as well as the next high builds over the Bight. And then on Thursday, that high edges a bit closer and the winds ease a fair bit and the showers start to ease as well, I think, mainly affecting coastal parts as well as the northeast ranges. So enjoy today and tomorrow because it's going to change over the weekend with those really strong winds Saturday night into Sunday and then the very cold conditions next Monday, Warwick.
I've been saying all week, it's always on the weekend, isn't it, when it turns, Michael? It feels like that.
Certainly isn't, and just for the start of spring as well.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, thanks very much for taking us through all of that, and I'm sure we'll hear in the next few days as well a big wrap-up of the winter weather and what to expect in spring. Thanks for your time, Michael.
Thanks, Warwick.
That's Michael Efron at the Weather Bureau taking us through that. Plenty more of your texts coming in on 0467 842 722. A texter actually asked that question during the weather, whether he should be spreading urea in the southern mallee. Beat me to it. Says, I think no spreading. Thanks, Warwick, for asking. Thanks very much for your text as well. You can put your name on it. I do like knowing who you all are. And there's plenty of people putting in plugs for their own shows now on our text line. Sparrow says, bugger the Melbourne show. Go to the best show on the GV, the Dookie Show. Another one says, waste of time attending the Melbourne show. Stick to the regionals and agricultural field days, especially the Elmore field days. From John from Elmore. Funny about that, isn't it? Another text. I'm trying to find some ones to say yes, but the vast majority of our texters are saying, no, don't go to the show, I must say. The latest one in says, the Melbourne show has lost its way and its heart and soul, sold out to the corporate devil for a pile of cash. Keep the texts coming and tell us if you think we should go to the show or not, or you can always comment on any story you hear as well. 0467 842 722 for text, to call us 1300 977 222.
Streaming right around the world, you're with the Country Hour, Australia's longest running radio show.
Still hold that title. Organic farming in Australia is booming and it's now worth almost $1 billion. But while production and demand is growing annually, many feel the industry lacks a united voice. Cara Jeffrey spoke to Don Murray, who grows vegetables at Collyambly in New South Wales, as well as in far north Queensland. He's among those calling for a national body for organics.
We've got to become a totally united industry. At the moment, we've got three or four different players that are doing part of a peak body, but not doing the whole peak body. We need just one peak body. So then we can talk to government, we can talk to the ACCC, and just put out one voice so that everyone knows who we are, what we are. And then for the final customer, we need to have the one logo out there that will then be the main sale logo for organics in Australia. And I should say certified organics, because there is a lot of organic out there that is not certified and you don't know whether it's organic or whether it's conventional.
And is that a big issue for you too, that labelling that's not truly organic?
Yes. People can say they can call products organic legally, but they can't call it certified organic unless they're certified. So a lot of people assume that organically labelled stuff is certified organic. It is not. And if we could get everything as certified organic, our market would jump by probably 30%.
The Australian Organic Working Group has appointed Tony Webster to oversee consultations with growers and processors.
In a nutshell, everyone really wants the industry to get organised and have that one harmonised voice. That's really a clear message coming out.
How's that affecting them at more that grassroots level, not having that harmonised voice?
The general grower really wants someone in their industry to go into bat for them, particularly with government and particularly with what they would probably see as the grey industry, those who impinge on the certified organic industry by marketing organic goods that aren't certified. And so it's really about improving compliance in the industry.
And from your role travelling around running these consultations, do you feel that the organic industry is a growing market in Australia?
Oh, it's definitely growing. So the latest stats show that it's probably growing at about maybe 15, maybe as much as 20% a year. And that's both exports and the domestic market. Market research seems to suggest that Australian consumers really have an eye for premium products, and they actually like the idea of buying organic products. So if the industry could market, tap into that sentiment more, there's huge potential for additional growth there.
And so a working group's been established. Who's involved with that?
So most of the industry leaders are there. Certainly representation from all of the major certifiers of businesses, but we've also got traders involved. And growers are there as well.
And you've got the job of bringing together all these challenges and working out where to from here. So what's next? What will you do once you finish these consultations?
We'll be putting a roadmap together for the industry, some recommendations on where they should go. And that will very much depend on what we hear from growers and producers and processors as we go around the country. So far, what we've been hearing is there's a big appetite for the industry to do this as quickly as possible. So that's been good, but it'll depend on. It's quite possible we may get different messages from different areas, and that's the reason for doing regional consultations, is to see what the view is right across the nation.
That's Policy Partners Managing Director Tony Webster, who's overseeing the consultation on behalf of the Australian Organic Industries Working Group, speaking with Cara Jeffrey. One text here, though, disputing a lot of that story, saying there is one peak body, the OFA, Organic Federation of Australia, which represents farmers and certifiers. This was solved in the 1990s. Again, put your name on the text, but thank you very much for sending that in to 0467 842 722. Now, just before we head to markets on the country, let's talk about your Eckies and your Rockies. For a long time, the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator has been the benchmark price for Australian beef prices, and it really still is. But analyst firm Mercado today has released a price indicator that captures online sales and prices for cattle. And it shows, although more volatile, online prices are opening up a gap that is higher than sale yard prices. Matt Dalgleish is a livestock analyst with Mercado at Ballarat and can join us now to tell us a little bit more. Welcome to the Country Hour. Why are prices higher online?
Oh, yeah, thanks, Warwick. Always a pleasure to be on the Country Hour. So, look, we've kind of created this online young cattle indicator now. It does mirror the same types of cattle in terms of fat score and live weight, and also from the same regions where the Eki draws the 26 sale yards around the eastern seaboard there.
So you're comparing apples with apples as best you can?
We are, trying to as best, and obviously we're also able, through our database here, we've got a fairly extensive database in the cattle, and we've been able to also filter out, your types of online sales, like your Wagyus and other kind of, maybe premium breeding stocks and whatnot. So, we have got this Oki indicator that pretty closely represents an Oki, but in an online format. But, there is obviously a bit of a price differential still if you look at the two charts side by side in terms of the price movement over the past 2 years. We've probably got to continue to interrogate the data as we go through the process. But, it could be the fact that you maybe get, the bigger lines generally going through the Options Plus system, and potentially maybe, more common to have maybe professional breeders and professional operators going through that system for their choice of sales. So that might account for some of the reason behind that bit of a price difference.
Yeah, so even though if you're looking at the same types of cattle as best you can, there still might be a quality difference with online compared to at the sale yard.
Yeah, potentially. Potentially that's what it's showing there as well. I think what one of the key issues is as well, though, is over time, if we were able to use this indicator to look not just at one snapshot, but how does that spread differential vary over time and through the season indeed as well. So you can start to really look at the data and crunch the numbers and kind of start to see how the two separate indices behave over time and in relation to each other, which is going to be a really interesting analysis to look at.
Why is it important to look at an online cattle sale figure as opposed to just a wider industry one?
Well, I think it's, when you're looking at these areas of the market segment, certainly the online kind of systems that are out there are gaining popularity and gaining market share, year by year. So, it's one of those things where it's an alternative sales method, and the data that's out there, in the general public space, to be able to collect and then start to manipulate. Obviously, people in agriculture are well aware of the value of good kind of robust data and lots of it. And so the first stage is having the data, and the second thing is knowing what to do with it. And we think that as this online sector, it's forecast to grow, and as it continues to grow, it's going to become more and more relevant. So, look, it's just another way to report on an alternative marketplace than a sale yard.
And this is your product, so it's behind a paywall. People have to subscribe to get it. It's not freely available like Meat and Livestock Australia data. Does that make it more irrelevant than, say, the wider industry data if it's something that's not accessible to all?
Look, it's drawn from range of data, and obviously there's a bit of work that goes in behind the scenes to collect and then manipulate the data. So that's one of the reasons why certainly the analysis of it is behind the paywall. We are looking at as we automate the process as much as we can, and we are looking at potentially publishing what the index is to be freely available. And of course, the Mercado website does have some of the information that's freely accessible to everyone. And then there's as you get into the more in-depth analysis and some of the stuff we do that takes a lot of man hours, then some of that gets put behind the paywall. So about 25% is free on the car, and about 75% is behind the paywall.
We're nearly out of time, but I do want to ask this, Matt Dalgleish, before we let you go. This is for beef markets, but what about sheep and lamb markets? Is there something that you're looking at there?
So the data set we've got covers beef and cattle and sheep and lamb, so we can manipulate it in any way we like to look at different regions, different types of cattle. And we're going to have a webinar coming up on the 6th of September, which is open to everyone. You can get on that, and then we're going to talk more about the online indicator on that. So if anyone's got any queries, they can certainly, and that's free for anyone. You don't have to be a Mercado subscriber to jump in on a webinar.
Matt Dalgleish, thanks very much for your time taking us through Ockies. Well, let's see if they go into the vernacular like Eckies do. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Warwick.
Matt Dalgleish, livestock analyst with Mercado at Ballarat, talking about the online young cattle indicator, looking at online prices for cattle. We'll talk probably more about that when we start finding some interesting nuggets of information in the data. Let's go to my livestock markets now. There's still room for the sale yard on this show. Let's go to Bairnsdale Cattle now. Good afternoon, Brendan Fletcher.
G'day, Warwick. Numbers decreased to 330. That's 160 fewer, with most of the usual buyers present but not all operating fully in a cheaper market in places. Quality declined with fewer prime lots and a plainer run of cows making up half of the yarding. Trade cattle eased 15 cents. A handful of grain steers and bullocks sold to firm demand. Most heavy cows eased 5 to 15 cents, while lighter lots sold mostly firm, with processors loading heavyweights for an estimated 441 to 485 cents a kilogram carcass weight. Yearling trade steers sold from 285 to 302. Yearling heifers to the trade, 260 to 275. Grown steers and bullocks, 275 to 289. Most light and medium weight cows, 152 to 213. Heavyweights, 205 to 257. And heavy bulls, 213 to 240. This is Brendan Fletcher reporting for MLA.
To Colac Cattle now, let's go to Graham Palmer.
Good afternoon, everyone. Cattle numbers increased this week at Colac with 212 head yarded. Quality improved with more young cattle and grown heifers penned. Usual buying group plus some restock and competition operating in a mostly firm market. All classes of cattle sold close to unchanged with heavy beef bulls, eating 10 to 15 cents, making 275. Beef muscle heifers sold to the trade at 315. Yearling steers and heifers made from 256 to 279. Grown steers sold similar and made to 270 cents, with the grown heifers selling from 250 to 265. Medium manufacturing steers made to 200 cents. Cows mostly sold unchanged, with heavy beef cows selling from 233 to 250. Heavy dairy cows making from 190 to 235. Medium e-muscle cows sold from 111 to 185 cents. Light veal is sold from 280 to 300 cents, and the heavier b-muscle calves selling from 270 to 315. Yearlings made from 256 to 279. Feeders paid from 240 to 270. Grown steers were in short supply and they sold to 270 cents. Heavy beef cows made from 233 to 250. Then Graham Pine with Colac for MLA.
Thanks very much, Graham. Lucky last, Wagga lambs. Here's Leanne Dax.
36,000 lambs and just over 7,400 sheep were offered, of which there was 23,600 new season's lambs in the offering, which sold a reduced field of buyers. Quality was not the standard of the previous sale, with some suckers lacking finish, while there was quite a tail to the old lamb section. Heavy lambs are in short supply, with not the weight in the offering. Trade lambs are well supplied, along with plenty of young, lightweight lambs to suit processors and restockers. Sucker lambs sold $1 to $3 dearer for the trade and heavies. Old trade lambs were firmed to two easier. New season's trade, 128 to 171, averaging 635 cents a kilogram carcass weight. Heavy suckers, 165 to 171. The extra heavy pens made from 170 to 192. There was a big selection of store lambs, with one property offering 3,800. The bulk of the store lambs sold from $70 to 123. Lambs to feed on topped at 127. Old trades, 110 to 159. Heavy old lambs, 156 to 171. The extra heavy old lambs, 170 to 217. Averaging 600 cents a kilogram carcass weight. With the sheep yet to be sold, I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Some great texts still on whether we should go to the show or not with the Country Hour. We'll put them into our mailbag for tomorrow because we've got a little bit of time to say hello to Nicole Chavastek. Hi, Nicole.
Hello, how are you going?
Very well. What's on your program today?
Well, last week the council was sacked for maladministration, and this week the Maryborough residents are up in arms because they all got their rate notices and they want to know why they're being asked to pick up the tab for someone else's financial mismanagement. So we're going to have a look at that. And also, have you ever taken on a task everyone said you could never do and succeeded?
Well, I got through the Country Hour a few days, haven't I?
You're a legend.
Gold star. We'll listen to that at 3 o'clock with Nicole Chavastek and Statewide Drive. That's it for us today. I hope you have a great afternoon. It's